I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. Douglas Smith joins me now. He is an award-winning Toronto author of speculative fiction, out now with his, this first full collection of short fiction, Chimeroscope. There are 16 stories of fantasy and science fiction that will take you from 14th century Japan to the end of the world, from virtual reality to the end of reality. As regular listeners will know, I don't read much fiction, and certainly not science fiction, but it's fascinating enough for me to talk about. The people over at Chaizine Publications sent over the book, so I figured let's talk about it. We'll talk about what's had in the book, as well as Mr. Smith's craft. Douglas Smith's website is smithwriter.com. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Douglas Smith. Good morning, Mr. Smith.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining us. What have you written heretofore? I mean, looking at the bio, there's something like 16 books or something like that?
Ooh, I don't think so. I have basically been a short story writer to date, so I've published about, 30 different short stories in a variety of magazines in terms of first write sales, and then I've been translated into something like 24 languages. So my total sales are in short fiction is just under 120 around the world, I guess. This is my first full short story collection. I had an earlier collection prior to this, a smaller collection. And I've recently finished my first novel that I'm marketing.
Yeah. Now, about translating the stories, what sort of languages are they translated into?
Wow. French, German, Italian, Greek.
I'm assuming that you don't speak all the languages. Is that
no.
Yeah, so how does that work for translation? How do you know that what you've written in English translates well into another language, or do you look at that at all?
Quite often you don't. You have no real control over it other than if you're dealing with a fairly well-established professional, either market or anthologist in another country, another language, that you're assuming that they're doing a good job on the translation. Sometimes they're smaller genre magazines that rely on volunteer work, and you can't be sure that it's a good translation. I was actually on a panel in a convention in Brighton in the UK a couple of weeks back where we were talking about this. I maintain a list of a market list on my website of foreign markets for short fiction that will translate and publish, and that was one of the issues about how you can be sure. And short answer is you can't. The only time I've been fairly certain that I had a good translation is when I had a story appear in a French magazine in France, and then it was picked up for translation into a magazine in Quebec, and I happened to know the Quebecois translator, and he worked with me, and he was able to validate for me that the original translation was actually quite good and quite accurate.
And do you hear from your foreign readers?
Yeah, I do, and it's interesting. There seem to be some countries that have a higher level of readership and interest in speculative fiction. France is one of them, and for some reason my stories seem to have a special appeal in France. Greece is another one. I don't really understand why, but it's sort of a nice benefit of getting translated out of just English, that you do get a larger readership, and also just build up some friendships with editors and fans around the world.
No, as you know, I don't read science fiction or much fiction for that matter. Is this your sort of favorite genre to read?
I read fairly broadly, I guess, but a lot of it, because you are a writer, you also have to keep current with what's being written in the genre. So I do tend to read a fair bit of speculative fiction, but I'm actually write and read more urban fantasy than anything in recent years, and that maps onto what I've been writing in recent years as well.
Speculative fiction, science fiction, is that the same thing?
Speculative fiction is. It's probably a term that's not much used outside of Canada, but it attempts to just broaden the category. Science fiction is quite often used as the catch-all for the genre, but that doesn't actually include the full scope of fantasy, the range of fantasy from high to urban fantasy. It doesn't include horror, etc. So a lot of us try to use spec fic or speculative fiction to just broaden the umbrella so people don't think we're just writing about science fiction.
How early was it for you that you liked this sort of writing?
I guess I started, grade 5, grade 6, starting reading, as a lot of the writers and fans did who got into it back then, what they called the Heinlein Juveniles. Robert A. Heinlein was a U.S. science fiction writer. A lot of what science fiction that he wrote was aimed at not just adults, but also he wrote a series for younger audiences. So you'll find a lot of science fiction fans got into it via his books. Then I kind of got away from it for a while, came back to it in university. Favorite writers back then, Ray Bradbury, probably one of the reasons that I enjoy short fiction so much, Asimov and Heinlein again as adults. If I go back to those works now, really the only ones that really stand up for me continue to be Bradbury's short fiction.
Did you always write? I mean, even as early as grade 5, did you want to do that perhaps?
I think I did. I never tried to do it seriously. I wrote a fair bit sort of in late high school and never tried to get it published. And then just finally at some point in my adult life, excuse me, I guess about 95, 96, I just said, you know, I'm going to try this. I'm going to see if I can actually write something that can get published. And I sold my first piece of short fiction. I remember getting the acceptance letter on December 31st of 96.
And I read somewhere that you started writing as a sort of way to deal with a midlife crisis. Is that correct?
That's the way I put it, is that, you know, most guys will be out, you know, spending hours on a golf course, and I just preferred to try to chase a different kind of dream here.
And you still have a day job, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it had nothing to do with writing at all?
No, nothing at all. I'm an IT executive. So it's there's really virtually no overlap, other than, you know, having good writing skills always is going to help you.
Now, how do you find time to write?
You just make the time. I'm a lot of times I just don't have the time, which can be frustrating. But I'm pretty good at writing anywhere. So I write on my notebook, so I can write on a subway, on a train, in a coffee shop, anywhere where I get a bit of time. So I tend to take the train in for morning commutes, so that gives me some time. And, you know, quiet weekend mornings before the rest of the family gets up and things like that. So you do it a bit at a time. And I personally find, as long as I've started a project, I'm fine with just grabbing a bit of time and getting a bit more done. When I'm starting something new, somewhat for a short story, definitely for a novel, I need a larger block of time where I can just get its back broken and know where I'm going with it.
There are these 16 stories in this book. They've appeared elsewhere, is that correct?
Yeah, with the exception of one, they're all reprints, so which is typical for a collection. The main reason writers like to do a collection is that they've had stories appear in magazines and anthologies over the year, and it is, from an author's point of view, it's just enjoyable to be able to pull together your favorite stories into one actual book. So this one has, a trade paperback version has 15 previously published stories and one new one, and there was a limited edition hardcover edition which had one additional story in it as well.
Well, one review of the book said that we see your versatility as a writer. Is that the goal when culling a collection together to get some of your best work? And how do you determine that?
Yeah, it was a challenge. I thought I'd had a shorter collection come out in 2008, which actually had just three novelettes in it, and two of them were new material written for that book. So what I wanted to do was get something where I could pull all my favorite stories together, and I was somewhat surprised that once I put them all together that it ended up being too large, so I had to do some culling. And that probably prompted the name of Chimeroscope, which is, you know, a beast made up of disparate parts. What I tried to do was pick the stories that I personally always enjoyed and was proud of, as well as ones that my fans, my readers, have told me over the years were some of their favorites. Often the two were the same, sometimes they weren't. Sometimes I'm very surprised at what stories fans really like. So that involved cutting ones that I would have liked to put in, because Cheezine tends to be a press that goes for darker fiction. Some of the ones I dropped were on the lighter side, so this would be the collection here tends to be more on the dark or the bittersweet. I wanted to get a mix. I try to sort them in an eclectic order, where you might read science fiction, the next one would be fantasy, the next one might be a horror, the next one might be sort of surreal, slipstream, etc. But essentially, I tried to pick the ones that I was proud of and really wanted to have together in the first full collection.
And this sort of writing, speculative fiction, is it the best sort of writing for you to understand ourselves, like you writing it? Do you think you understand where we are in the world today better, perhaps?
I'm not sure if it helps me understand it better. It certainly, I think, helps a writer comment on our world, where we think we're going, what we think the issues are. I think that's the main power of certainly science fiction. Science fiction at its best is kind of holding up I think it was Damon Knight, a famous anthologist, to hold up a distorted mirror to our world and to focus on one particular issue. And fantasy does as well, especially the urban fantasy that I try to write, where you're picking up themes and issues, and even though you're presenting them in a fantastic world or a fantastic way, the issue is still real. And it allows you to take different characters with a slightly non-everyday viewpoint and comment on those. So I think that's the value, and certainly the types of fiction that I enjoy reading is where we can use it as a lever or as a focusing tool. A lot of people view science fiction or fantasy or whatever as some little tight, small genre, and I kind of take the broader view that essentially everything, any piece of fiction starts out as having the full possible scope that I think falls under fantasy. And as we start applying rules to that, like you can't have, you know, future, you can't have time travel, you can't have any fantastic creature in it, we're actually limiting the scope to what a writer can use and what tools they can use. So mimetic fiction, the typical standard everyday fiction that reflects the reality of our world, I think is actually it gives you smaller scope as a writer.
I'm going to probably butcher the name in pronouncing it. Is it Julie Zernida?
It's Cherneda, yeah.
Cherneda. And she did the introduction to the book. She says that you expose your innermost emotions in the stories collected herein. Do you think you do that consciously or unconsciously? Or do you think you do that at all? Or do you think you do it at all?
I think every writer does, and I think probably every writer's fear is knowing that they do, but not really knowing how much they show. And I think one of my comments in my introduction was, I don't know what themes I deal with. I don't know if there are any obvious themes that a reader would pick up and say, wow, that's obviously something he keeps going back to. So when Julie makes that comment, I guess it's simply something that a writer has to do. I tend to be, what I write, the stories I think work the best of mine are the ones where I really understand my character, where plot decisions, plot turns hinge on decisions made by the character based on where they are in their lives, what their problems are, what they're trying to get to, what arc I see them following. And I think when you do that, if you're working through characters, it you have to base that in you know, your view of people, different aspects of people that they show, and I'm sure a lot of those aspects are aspects of yourself. I'm not really sure what ones I'm showing. I have not, Julie's a friend, I've not circled back with her and asked her what she thinks I show and what themes I come back to.
Now, do you think about it at all?
I really don't, and even when I put together this collection, as I was going through and, writing forewords and afterwards for all the stories, I can't say anything obvious came to me. I know I tend to write about relationships. I tend to want to make sure I understand my characters. I know, I'm not sure if it's my favorite ending, but it's an ending that, a feel of the stories that I tend to go with or end up with is bittersweet. That's probably not a tone I would have got if I'd started writing earlier. I just think as you go through life and you realize that there's good things that happen, there's bad things that happen, and that really is reality. So it probably is something that gets reflected in a lot of my my stories and my endings and the resolution for characters.
Did you wish you'd started younger as a writer, perhaps?
My immediate reaction is yes, but I don't know if I would have been the same writer. So I wish I would have started earlier, because I know I have probably more stories I want to write than I will likely be able to write, especially now that I'm trying to focus on novel-length fiction. So in a word, yes, but you never know what changes that might have brought.
Did you find the transition from going from short stories to novels a difficult one, or did it just come naturally, perhaps?
It came naturally. A lot of people ask me that, and they say, what's the big difference? And
yeah.
I rather naive and somewhat tongue-in-cheek answer is, well, it's longer. But, when I write a short story, I don't need to write down an outline. So one of the things I had to do for the novel was I actually had to write down an outline and try to plan out the scenes. And because there are more characters, I had to work out multiple character arcs, and I just found I couldn't do it keep it all in my head. But when you get down to, okay, I know where that character is going, and I know where they're bumping into these other characters, and I know where my main plot points are, and what the three, the three acts and the big climax in each act, etc. Once you have that in your head and you just start writing scene by scene, it still comes down to, one word after another and one sentence after another.
When you're crafting a story or writing a novel, the characters that are in the story, do you have to like them at all?
What a great question. Yes.
Even if they're bad guys or whatever?
Yeah, and perhaps like is, when I'm dealing with my villains, is or the antagonist, like perhaps is not accurate, but it's pretty close. I certainly have to be able to sympathize with them. I have to understand why they are the way they are. And be able to say, I can understand if I had all that happened to me, that maybe I'd be where you are. I really do, and I find I always know when I'm not ready to write a story, when I'm having trouble with a character, and if I don't feel I know them and understand them, the story, I just can't write it.
Doug, it's been nice to talk to you today. I promise that I will pick up the book and read some of the stories in here in the next few weeks. Congratulations on continued good luck with the book.
Okay, well, thank you very much again for having me on the show, Joe.
You're very welcome. The book is called Chimeroscope. It's from Kaizen Press. SmithWriter.com is Doug's website. Douglas Smith on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.